ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति। ॐ मे ब्रह्मन् प्रोटेक्ट अस बोथ, मे ब्रह्मन् bestow upon us both the fruit of knowledge. May we both obtain the energy to acquire knowledge. May what we both study reveal the truth. May we cherish no ill feeling toward each other. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all. So continuing on from our previous discussions, the conclusion was, this world is like a dog's curly tail, and therefore no good can ever be done to this world. That obviously seems to be one of the conclusions. Also, it is very easy to misunderstand some of these wonderful theories. One of the most misunderstood of such theories is the theory of karma, the law of karma. What does karma say? If someone is suffering, it is because he had done something wrong in his or her previous birth. If somebody is enjoying, that is also because that person has done something good. So, of course, if somebody is enjoying, there is nothing we need to add. If we try to help a person who is enjoying, the only way we can do it is to take away his happiness, which we, of course, we do not wish. But if someone is suffering, this philosophy that it is because of his or her past karma is very negative type of philosophy. Why? Because of two reasons. One reason is, if anyone is suffering because of his or past karma, or suppose you are suffering, will you say, I will not do anything, I will just sit down here, I will not help myself, I am suffering because of my past karma, will you sit? You will do something about it. If you are thirsty, you will seek water. If you are sick, then you seek medicine. Somewhere or the other, you cannot keep quiet. Suffering always makes us seek a relief. The same principle also applies to others too. Secondly, how do we know that it is not our duty to do good to others? Not because we feel that others are helped by others, but it's just because it is our duty to help others. Even from a purely logical point of view, just imagine, if someone is enjoying, what do we say? This person must have done something good in his or her past life. What is the good this person does? Always good means something which is unselfish, is it not? Suppose your left hand is itching and you take your right hand and scratch. Would people give a reward to you? He is doing a lot of good to the world. It's only when somebody does unselfishly something, the world appreciates such a person. So it is our bounden duty to help other people. That is why we have to do good to the world. But never have the idea we can change other people. This is the emphasis Swamiji is trying to point out to us. You do all the good that you can, but never think thereby any good is coming to the world. You are able to help the world. No, you cannot help the world. Why? Because of one important principle we have discussed last class. Unless a person is ready to receive the help, no amount of forcing, you cannot force down help down a person. You cannot digest food for other people. You cannot eat medicine for other people. If the person himself is not able to do that, there is nothing you can do about it. So, it is our bounden duty to do all the best that we can do at the same time, keeping in mind these two points. We do good because it is good for us. We do good because we are actually debtors to the whole world. This is the point Swami Vivekananda is coming here. Now we will take it up from this point onwards. Supposing you construct a huge hospital because people are suffering, you have the money, you feel like helping people, and you might feel proud, I have done some good to this world. Swami Vivekananda says, how much time does it take for an earthquake to completely annihilate all the good works we have done? In seconds, all your good work can come to naught. Suppose you bring about peace in one country. History is a very, very funny thing, stranger than fiction, they say, because nobody can imagine such wonderful type of imaginations as history does it. People went to Iraq, let us take it in a good light, that out of unselfish, pure unselfishness, to do good to Iraqis. Why? They wanted to remove some bad, evil person, so that all the people there will be eternally thanking all the benefactors. So what is happening? As soon as one evil person is removed, everybody seems to have become evil now. Instead of bringing about peace, in the past at least, you know, out of fear, they would not do bad things. Now there is no fear. They are going on killing each other. That shows what good we can do. And yet, it is our duty to go on doing good. Swami Vivekananda's point is very, very a point which we have to meditate upon. In this world, nothing is permanent. Anything can be destroyed in a twinkling of an eye. A mighty earthquake, or a volcano, or a tsunami, or anything like that, or a bomb, or man-made disasters, anything can destroy all the good works that one has done. What is the reason for this? The reason is, this is the very nature of the world. Do not expect this world always to be progressing. Progressively it will be good. One day there will be no evil people, there will be no evil. What happens? As soon as the evil disappears, the good also disappears. Why? Because the good and the evil are not two separate things. They are obverse and reverse of the same coin. So good and evil are how we look at the world. Many times we have mentioned this fact, and once more I will mention it for this time. But in future I will be mentioning again and again. The same event can be interpreted as good or evil according to the situation. Supposing you meet a hungry tiger in a forest. Is it a good event or an evil event? Depends upon who is being asked, especially early in the morning. The tiger thanks the Almighty Lord and Lord, you have been extremely kind, Kripa Sagar. You have brought first class breakfast in front of me. If you ask the man, of course, you will say what an evil day it is. Any event is having both good and bad sides at the same time to different people, because situation is different according to different people. Sometimes the same situation is bad for the same person at different times. For example, at warmth or central heating is very good in winter. But because it is good, you go keep on keeping it. What happens when summer comes? Very central heating is very bad. So everything in this world is like that. This very world looks so wonderful for a child, for a young man in good circumstances. But as soon as the person has some incurable disease, or what I call, as soon as he starts becoming a Vedantin, the whole attitude changes. So, Swami Vivekananda is telling, you just do what best you can do, because that does the best good to yourself. That is the purpose of doing good. Another point, which I mentioned in my last class, is many times this question comes to us, what is life? And we have to say, life is something that is trying to teach us a wonderful lesson. Only one lesson. What is that lesson? That you are divine. But because we do not learn in the positive way, there are two ways to teach a lesson. One is a positive way, another is a negative way. Supposing you are going and suddenly you come to a place, you do not know the further directions. You want to go to some place. So you ask a person nearby, can you tell me how I can reach this place? And this person, suppose there are two persons nearby, both of them will give two separate answers. One person will say, you go this way, very soon you will reach the place you want to go. The other person will say, do not go that way, otherwise you will ending up in a wrong place. Are they telling two different answers, or are they speaking of the same answer? One person is emphasizing the positive way, the other person is also telling the same thing in a negative way. You know, sometimes there is a lot of conflict between religions. So they think Buddhism is totally different from Vedanta. What did Buddha teach? He taught pure Vedanta. So what does Vedanta teach? It has two principles. What is it? Brahman alone is real. Everything else is unreal. God is real. Everything else is unreal. That is the essence of whole Vedanta. What does Vedanta do? It emphasizes God is real. God is real. You are divine. You manifest your divinity. This is what we have been discussing. What did Buddha teach? Buddha did not mention anything about God. All that he said is, this world is unreal. This world is unreal. This world is unreal. Get rid of this illusory, non-existent self, means egotism. So, is he talking something totally different? No, he is talking about exactly the same Vedantic truth, but he is emphasizing the negative side. Do not go this way, otherwise you will suffer. And Vedanta is telling, go this way, you will be a very happy person. It's just an emphasis. But how much misunderstanding can come between these two? Same way, this world is teaching us, this one is a negative way, one is a positive way. One positive way is, the world is teaching, there is tremendous amount of happiness. You do this, you serve people, you be unselfish, you pray to God, you do this, you do that, you will gradually get more and more and more happiness. And where do we get the highest type of happiness? When you reach God, that is the infinite happiness, unbroken, infinite, eternal bliss. And the other lesson, the same life is teaching us the other lesson. Why are you not going forward? Because you are attached. You are attached to illusory things. So do not be attached. That is the lesson this life is trying to teach us. You cling. This is my family. These are my children. This is my body. This is my wealth. But what happens, you know? Everything is in a flux. Everything is changing. Tragedies happen. Family members can die. Accidents can happen. Jobs can be lost. Fortune can change. Everything is changing all the time. But we are not learning our lessons. So when we are particularly attached to something, then the big blow will come when actually the change happens. Then we are not able to cope with it. It brings tremendous amount of frustration in us. But then we say, no more. I do not want to suffer. I want to be non-attached. Then for a few days you pray to God, you go to run to the Swami, you hear the Vedanta classes. And then after some say, Swami is talking the same thing again and again and again. What is the point in going there? Come on, there is a lot of happiness here. You go and get attached to something else. And then after some time get another blow. Again come to the Vedanta center. This is why we see people, you know, they don't come regularly. And some devotee came after 2-3 years. I asked, what is the matter? I don't see you nowadays. Oh, Swami, now we have no problems. So when you have problems, then you come. When you are not having problems, you won't come. But those problems are good because they are bringing you to the feet of God, some way or the other. So this is how, over in long periods of lives, we have changed so many members. We had been husbands, we had been wives, we had been children, we had been parents, we had been friends, we had been enemies. And slowly, slowly the lesson is sinking. Everything in this world changes. No point in getting attached to it. Slowly the lesson sinks. That is the greatest lesson life is trying to teach us. You know, we do not easily learn. Young couple, they get married, they are in love with each other, then slowly children come, and then they get attached to the children. Previously they were getting attached to each other. An old man used to come to Belur Mutt, earlier days. Very humorous man. So one day he said, Swami, now, first when I was born, I had only 2 legs. Now I had become a centipede. So he was asked, explain, what do you mean by that? You know, when I was alone, I was bachelor, single, only 2 legs. Then I got married. Then it became, I had 4 legs. Then slowly children start coming. With each child, the number of legs, you know, pair of legs had increased. Now so many children, their children, I can hardly move about in the house. I had become like a centipede. So our attachment grows and grows. Don't you see? Then the children grow up. And then in the name of studies or in the name of jobs, they slowly move out from your place. Have you not seen that? And then you feel, oh, this child, you know, could not sleep without me. I have to be there by the side. Now, occasionally they phone and say, Mom, how are you? And slowly, 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 you know, they have their own life to lead. That is the most normal thing. That is what you also have done from your parents. Detachment comes. Then they have their own lives. And then occasionally they will phone to you or write to you and say hello to you, happy birthday to you and all that. This process goes on and on and on. A time will come when you kick your buckets. And then do you think that these children will be heartbroken? No, they will genuinely grieve because they love. But for how long? The world is telling, this is no time, there is no time. Don't stop and grieve because there are other attachments. So they think that their children will be with them forever. Do they learn their lessons? And when their children go away from them, then they start, oh, our children are no more dependent upon us. You see, if someone is not dependent upon us, we feel pain in our hearts. We need somebody to cuddle, to be called, oh, without you, I cannot live. Always the process starts like that. Without you, I cannot live. After some time, with you, I cannot live. That is the process. But if we are wise, then we learn our lesson. Detachment is the way to learn. But what does it mean? Does it mean that we should become cold and heartless and all that? That is the subject for the next chapter, which I will come very shortly. So, Swami Vivekananda is telling, let us give up all this foolish talk of doing good to the world. It's not waiting for your or my help. Yet we must work and constantly do good, because it's a blessing to ourselves. That is the only thing, the only way we can ever become perfect. Swamiji is concluding this one. To recapitulate the chief points in today's lecture. First, we have to bear in mind that we are all debtors to the world, and the world doesn't owe us anything. It is a hard thing to accept this, that we are all debtors to the world. Are we? Yes. By our very birth, by our very living, do you know how many organisms are in our body which are helping us to survive? Without those organisms, it is impossible to survive. Everything in this world is trying to help us to survive. What about enemies? They are doing the greatest good to us, unbeknown to themselves. Actually, our enemies are our greatest friends, well-wishers. That's why one wise man had said, you know, Lord, so I can take care of my enemies, please take care of, help me in taking care of my friends. How are the enemies helping? Seshe jara bhansh diye shajya koreche tadero dhannabad. There is a saying, you know, in Bengal villages, they want to entertain themselves, so they organize a drama. Because it's a village, everybody has to help. Always when somebody does some good, there will be detractors, you know. Oh, these useless fellows, why this drama now? We are quite happy, we go on doing it. And who are these actors? Do you think they are actors? Whatever you do, they try to pull you down. But some people are there. Some people bring mats, some people bring food, some people bring water, some people bring canopy, some people bring a bit of chairs. Everybody. This chair story, did I tell you the chair story? There was a speaker, there was a lecture organized in a village. And because a speaker was invited, and he was the most boring speaker the world had ever seen. So somebody brought up a chair and put it on the platform. The speaker went on and on. After a few minutes, the audience understood the capacity of the speaker and just left. Only one man was sitting till the very end of the talk. So the speaker was very highly pleased. At least one man is appreciating. Said, I'm so grateful to you. You are the only man who is appreciating my talk. The man said, sorry sir, I never heard what you spoke. I'm waiting for the chair you are sitting on. It's my chair. I have to take back home. So, you know, in this world, there are people who go on criticizing, but they also are doing indirectly some good. How? Because you see, we have no objectivity. We cannot estimate ourselves. We do not know how many defects, how many weaknesses we have. We think we are all perfect. But when somebody else is there, they could objectively see us and they could place us in the right place. They can put us in the right place. So criticism is very good. That is why Swami Vivekananda used to say, if you want to progress in spiritual life very quickly, go and live in a place where everybody is trying to pull you down. Then you see, you will constantly be thinking of God only. Otherwise, you will get attached. So, we are all debtors. This is the principle because of which this great concept of Pancha Mahayagna had come, you know, in Hindus are obliged. They are indebted to five factors. Therefore, whole life goes on only in paying off the debt. We are indebted to the sages. We are indebted to our ancestors. We are indebted to gods who provide us with all the good things in life. We are indebted to other human beings. We are indebted to all non-human and non-living things too. The clouds, the sun, the moon, the rivers, the mountains. That is why in India, every river is deified. every plant is deified, every mountain is deified. Why? Because it is these things which are helping us live. Without this, life becomes impossible. The sun is the greatest god. As some scientist had pointed out, every time you eat a piece of something, you are eating a piece of sun, because it is the sunlight which comes in the form of food. It is the sun which makes the winds. It is the sun which brings the water. It is the sun which gives light, which gives life, which makes it possible for us to live sanely, not only physiologically, but even mentally. Otherwise, if there is without the sun, you know what do we become? Sad. Seasonal affectation disorder. You know that? For a long time, if you go without the sun, mind becomes very dull. That's why you see in this country, as soon as the sun comes, a little bit, they give up everything and then joyfully walk. And in Madras, as soon as this sun comes up, they joyfully they run into their homes, away from the sun, because they have too much of sun there. It is a great privilege for all of us to be allowed to do anything for the world. In helping the world, we are really helping ourselves. The second point is that there is a God in this universe. It is not true that this universe is drifting and stands in need of help from you and me. God is ever present therein. He is undying and eternally active and infinitely watchful. You know, Swami Adbhutananda, Latu Maharaj, was serving Sri Ramakrishna. And Sri Ramakrishna had a wonderful way of teaching the highest truths. Being tired, Swami Adbhutananda, Latu Maharaj at that time, his eyes were closing now and then while serving Sri Ramakrishna. And Sri Ramakrishna was asking him, "My boy, do you know what your Ram is doing now?" He said, "No, sir, I don't know." Then Sri Ramakrishna explained, "He is keeping watch. He is awake. While all the creatures sleep, he is keeping awake to protect them like a mother." Swami Adbhutananda never heard this. He said, "Sir, is it true?" Sri Ramakrishna said, "Yes, it is true." "Is it right? Because it's we who are supposed to serve the Lord. And instead you are saying that it is the Lord who is serving us by keeping awake and then watching over us." He said, "Yes, my boy. If the Lord closes his eyes for a second, there will be a terrible disaster in this world. The whole world will come to an end." This marvelous truth has been put in the form of a story, you know, in our Puranas, mythologies. There was this Lord Shiva and Parvati were sitting there one afternoon, sunset, beautiful scene, and they were relaxed and Parvati was in a playful mood. So very playfully, she put her hands and closed the eyes of the Lord Shiva, you know, just for a moment. And Lord Shiva got very much annoyed and he said, "Parvati, never, never ever do that again." And Parvati said, "Lord, I am only playing. What wrong have I done?" He said, "Don't you understand? This one moment of ours is aeons and aeons of human beings. You have closed the eyes. What does it mean? The sun and the moon have been shut out from this world. Look at the world. All life has been destroyed because of your play." Do not take it too literally. It is to tell the fact that with this, supposing, you know, God sleeps, do you think you can live? So you say, "Well, the world is going on jolly well without God." No, my friend, you cannot live without God, because you have a wrong idea about God. What is God? Supposing you are very thirsty. What is your God? Well, suppose, you know, there is a place you are trapped, there is no oxygen. What is your God at that time? supposing the air and the wind and the clouds and the sun, everything says, everybody has got a holiday, only we don't have a holiday. You know Sunday? Sunday is a holiday, is it not? Sunday is dedicated to the sun. The poor fellow, do you think he has a holiday? About the sun says, it's my day off, I will go off. Do you know what will happen? Your whole Sunday will be ruined. God never takes leave. Eternally is going on. The wind is blowing, the water is falling, the clouds are pouring forth, the waters, the earth is compared to a mother. It is just giving you, sustaining you. And what do? The only you dig. The more you dig, the more she yields. God in the form of these five elements is sustaining the whole creation. That is why Sri Ramakrishna said, God never sleeps, he cannot sleep. If he takes rest, Mahapralaya will happen. All dissolution will take place. So there is a God and he is watching. He is taking care of his world. This is his world. If you being a human mother, if you can take care of your baby with infinite watchfulness, and do you know, a mother having a baby never ever sleeps. Is it a correct statement? You think no, because the mother also sleeps at night and other times too. What I mean is that subconsciously her mind is tuned. The slightest whimper of the baby instantaneously brings out response from the mother. I do not know whether you watch these wild movies by David Attenborough, nature movies. He was showing once some time back a bear is hibernating. It is at that time that it gives birth to the cubs. It is in a half dozing state. It has given birth to the baby and the baby is trying to feed itself. So it is trying to travel to suck the milk from the mother. You know, those, it's only just few inches, but it is compared, this for this baby to get to the breast of the mother, it is like a person like me and you trying to climb Everest. It is so difficult, you know, it is a tiny baby. What is the mother doing? With its paw, it is slowly pushing the baby up, unconsciously. So how is it doing? Suppose you go there, this is a very good bear, I can also have a sip of this. What do you think it will do? Somehow it understands, this is my baby, it needs this sustenance. So even in that state, somehow it is pushing the baby towards its source so that it can remain. What a marvelous thing. Just sit and imagine. Ya Devi Sarvabhuteshu Matri Rupena Samsthita. There is in Chandi, there is a verse. Salutations again and again to the mother, who, to the Divine Mother, who manifests in the form of mother into every creature. Without mother, we can never survive. No creature can ever survive. So there is a God and he is watching and he is taking care of it. When the whole universe sleeps, he sleeps not. He is working incessantly. All the changes and manifestations of the world are his. If something we see change, you interpret it as good, that is his will. And something which you interpret as bad, that is also his will. The whole universe is moving according to his will. That is why Indians have a way of playing with words. History. What is history? His story. It is the play of God. It is not your play. You think you can make history. You have no power to do that. His will, the Divine Mother's will, is manifesting in the form of events in this world. That is what is called history. Thirdly, we ought not to hate anyone. This world will always continue to be a mixture of good and evil. Our duty is to sympathize with the weak and to love even the wrongdoer. The world is a grand moral gymnasium wherein we have all to take exercise so as to become stronger and stronger spiritually. Beautiful point. There will be always the other side, which is evil, which we call evil. But this evil is also has a good side, because it is the same. There is no evil which doesn't bring us some good. There is no good which doesn't bring some evil. So if we really understand that, can you hate somebody? You see, a lot of good comes to us in the form of enmity, in the form of criticism. In fact, we will be nearer to God. If God is gracious, He manifests in the form of what we tend to call as evil. There is a beautiful verse in the Bhagavatam which says, if I am pleased with any devotee, the first thing that I do is to take away all his wealth. You remember the story of the Brahmin and the cow? Some future occasion we will tell you. But the point is, God manipulates the events in such a way that the so-called pain, so-called suffering becomes our greatest benefactors. Supposing God is very pleased, and then he says, my child, he wants to eat rasagullas, one every day. Do you know what will happen? Even you being human mothers, would you allow your baby, or would you fulfill all the baby's wishes? I want to go and play whole day. I will never want to go to school. If you wish good of your children, then you even forcibly, you can smack the person. You can even drag him to the school. You will not allow the child to sleep. You know, don't you wake up your children? Which child wants to get up in the morning? It's a beautiful story, you know. There was in this Middle East country, Mullah Nasruddin was there in that village. So, one day morning, the Mullah was sitting there. Then suddenly he saw all the other mullahs were herding all the little children to the mosque. So Nasruddin didn't know why this was happening. He asked, why, what is the matter? Why are you herding all these children? They said, Mullah, you know we don't have rain for the last 2-3 years. We are also not having. So herd all the children to the churches or temples. So we prayed and prayed to Allah, but somehow He is not listening to us. So, you know, we have faith that these innocent children's prayers will reach the ears of paradise and He will give rain. Mullah Nasruddin laughed and said, stupid fellows. Do you think Allah is going to listen to these stupid children playing? The other mullahs got very wild. Said, Mullah, you are blasphemous. These innocent babes, their prayer will always reach the throne of the Almighty. Mullah Nasruddin laughed and said, you are really dumb. If their prayer had their prayer reached the throne of the Almighty long back, you should have lost all your jobs. Which child wants to go to school and then be taught by these teachers? If they had any choice. So, many of our prayers, do you think that they don't reach the Almighty? Oh, all prayers reach the Almighty. But sometimes, He answers our prayers in a way which we do not expect, we do not desire. It is displeasing to us. But He knows, this is the best way I can help my child. In the form of separation, in the form of sickness or suffering, we learn great lessons. The Lord is watching this world. And it will go on without you or me. We are nothing. We are like straws. What can we do? So, if somebody does something bad to us, do not hate. Take it as message from the beloved. Do you know that? What it is? There was a great saint. He was called Pavahari Baba. One day, a scorpion had bit him. Somebody asked him, sir, what happened? He was in great pain. You know what he said? A message from the beloved. What a marvelous thing it is. A scorpion bite could be very, very painful. Or, there was Sri Ramakrishna mentions another incident. There was this great devotee who was, and also soldier, who was fighting the war. Somebody went and stabbed him. And his friends ran and asked, can you tell who stabbed you? You know what was his reply? It is my beloved Rama who stabbed me. Can we understand this? Of course, we need spiritual practice to understand. Any suffering in this world is a great blessing. Can you understand what Holy Mother said? Misery is a gift of God. We do not want to read that statement. Anything else but that. So, fourthly, we ought not to be fanatics of any kind, because fanaticism is opposed to love. One of the most marvelous statements that I have ever come across. Fanaticism is opposed to love. What do we see? Here are fanatics, terrorists. What do they profess? They profess that we are the greatest lovers of Allah. And why do you want to go and kill somebody else? Because that is what Allah wants us to do. They are fanatics. And they profess love for Allah. Do you think, do they really love Allah? Is this the way love manifests? If we love something, that the first thing that happens is fanaticism will go. Let me give you an example. Suppose you have a neighbor and you love that person, is one of your great friends, but unfortunately that person happens to come, imagine, from another religion, from another tradition, from another culture, whose ways are completely not acceptable to you. And you still say, he is your greatest friend. How do you look upon that person's activities? If you truly love, there will be no fanatic. Okay, that is another way of life. That is their culture. That is their tradition. And I completely accept it. That is the true effect of true friendship or love. But you say, I love this person, but I can't stand the way, you know, the persons behave and all that. Does it show that you are really friendly with that person? It doesn't show. You appear to be very sincere. You may genuinely even wish that, I would like to love this person. But love and its opposite, fanaticism, cannot stay together at the same time in the same place. It is impossible. So wherever we see fanaticism, and fanaticism can come in innumerable forms, not merely killing somebody, that is an extreme form. Fanaticism can come in the form of choosing the colors of the curtain. I was looking at a cartoon, you know, newly married couple. They were quarreling about the color of the curtains. And immediately the wife got, wait, let me bring a camera. This is our first married quarrel. If there is love, there would be no fun. Okay, that is your liking. This is my liking. This is the food you like. This is the food I like. This is the dress you like. This is the dress I like. So permit anything within reason and do not mind at all how the person does this thing. But we are intolerant. You know, there are people in this world with different natures. Some people talk too much. And some people talk too less. This seems to be opposed to each other. But there will be criticism, you know. Especially in this modern world, this some kind of psychological fanaticism is too much evident. One of these is, suppose you have a daughter, say 15 or 17 years old, and this daughter is not having a boyfriend. You think there is something seriously defective in the character of that girl, because she is unable to secure a boyfriend. Is it not? I'm talking about, you know, the Western society. The parents get very anxious. Is it a correct assessment? There are people who are simply not interested at that stage. They are interested in studies. They are interested in other things. They think it is not the time. So, but because 99% of the girls have boyfriends, 99 boyfriends have girlfriends, you think that it is normal psychology. And anything opposite to it is abnormal psychology. That is how we estimate things. How much really do we understand human nature? Sri Ramakrishna was, don't think it is only in this modern world, old time world also. Sri Ramakrishna was crying, Allah, Allah, Hari, Hari. And his mother thought, this man has gone mad. Yeah, and she brought him to Kamarpukur with all the anxiety of a mother. And there was no psychologist there. In those days, psychologists used these mantriks, we call, you know, those who control ghosts. So she had brought the controller of the ghost, and then the ghost came and said, sorry, he's perfectly normal. he's in a high spiritual state. So it needed the certificate of a ghost to make the mind of the mother a little bit peaceful. Every society, when people behave a little bit differently, they are immediately stamped as abnormal. Something very strange. Anyway, that is the nature of the word. So, you hear fanatics glibly saying, I do not hate the sinner, I hate the sin. And again, some of us are too clever for ourselves. We think we are too clever. What is that? Why don't you go to that person? Oh, he is a very wicked person. Well, wicked person means what? He is doing something wicked. But the person has got some good quality. Yes, yes, I know. He has also good qualities. I always distinguish. I only hate the bad things he does. I don't hate the person. Swami Vivekananda is telling, I have traveled practically half the world. I am yet to come across a person who could really distinguish between the actions of a wicked person and the wicked person. You know, we judge a person according to the actions. We never separate the person. It happens. And in our normal day-to-day life, you know, a monk should always be a good monk. Anybody who renounced this world should be a good monk. Because if he doesn't behave like a good monk, then he is doubly transgressing his duties. Why double? Because if an ordinary person who is not a monk misbehaves, only people say he is a bad person. But if a person who has renounced the world misbehaves, he is doubly to be blamed, because first of all, personally, if he does something wrong, he will be the loser. Secondly, he is bringing bad name to the monastic institution. Thirdly, if this person belongs to a reputed institution, like for example Ramakrishna Order, then his responsibility is threefold. Those two, personally he will go down. Second, he will also bring bad reputation to the monastic tradition. Thirdly, he will bring bad reputation to the whole Ramakrishna Order, the institute of which he is a member. I have heard this many times. So, you know, everybody is not the same. Sometimes they can slip. It's a normal thing. To err is human, as they say. How do they judge? Oh, all Ramakrishna sadhus. I know Ramakrishna mission. Sadhus are very bad. You know, they do not say this particular person only misbehaved. They would say all the Ramakrishna mission sadhus are bad. Same thing in the world also. If any person misbehaves, what do the general comments? Oh, that family is very bad family. Everybody in that family is bad. Nobody says only that particular individual is bad. We have the tendency to generalize, not to particularize. So it is very difficult to separate and say this is a wicked action, but the person also has something good in him. When we are spiritual, then we make that distinction. You know, Holy Mother. She is called Holy Mother. Why? Because she saw holiness in everyone. This is the what is called the nature of higher quality. Many times we do not understand. what is the nature of higher quality? I will give an example. Supposing there is a person who is of loving nature. What do you mean by that? If he loves only few particular people, can you call him a loving person? A loving person has a loving nature. He must love everybody. Then only he is called a loving person. Otherwise he is not a loving person. Similarly, we say this person is holy, a spiritual person. What does it mean? If he is just doing his prayers, meditations regularly and nicely, does it make the person spiritual? No. Who is a holy person? He sees holiness in everybody. He sees, you know, Sri Ramakrishna was telling once, I saw a wicked man enter into the Kali temple. I saw that even in him, the divine power is vibrating. Sri Ramakrishna is not saying, this person is a wicked person. He is a sinner. He has no hopes. He is telling, it is the divine mother is still manifest in him. At the moment, yes, that wickedness, a bad thing, it is manifesting. But it will change. That is why there is a saying, every sinner is a future saint. And every saint is a sinner in the past. No saint is born right from the sky as a perfect saint. We are all sinners in this life or in past life or whatever. So it is very important when we are trying to do some karma yoga, it's very important to look upon everyone as a manifestation of God. That is why Shiva Gnane Jiva Seva. The significance of that is, if you are trying to go and do good, and then you pick and choose and say, this person is good poor man, so I will do good to this good. But that poor man is very bad poor man. I am not going to do any good to him. These practical problems arise when we are trying to do some good. For example, in Jairam Bhatti, in Holy Mother's time, they started a dispensary, free medicines. So one day the disciple came and complained, Mother, even the rich people whom we know, they are quite well to do, they are also joining the queue to get free medicines. What shall we do? The medicines are meant for poor people who can't afford. Now if you say you drive away these rich people, then where do you put a line? So you have to say, who is a rich man? Who is a well-to-do man? What is the amount of money he has? All these things will... So mother said, whoever joins the queue, he is a poor man, irrespective of what he has or has not. Just serve him like anybody else. The whole point is, if you want to do good to only good but deserving people, how many... You will get a lot of deserving people. But I wonder how many good people you will get. Very difficult. So you have to see God in them. What does it mean? It means maybe this person is not good right now, but he will be all right in the future. Let me do my best to help. That is the attitude. I am prepared to go any distance to see the face of that man who can really make a distinction between the sin and the sinner. It is easy to say so. If we can distinguish well between quality and substance, we may become perfect men. It is not easy to do this. And further, the calmer we are and the less disturbed our nerves, the more shall we love and the better will our work be. So this is the end of this particular chapter. By helping the world, we help ourselves. Swamiji is summarizing, if you want to help, be calm. Be peaceful. Be tranquil. How can we be tranquil? If we go on looking at all the bad qualities of people, we can never be calm. What is the way to overcome this problem? See the divinity, future divinity in everyone. And that is how we can become calm. Otherwise, there is no other way. So the next chapter is non-attachment is complete self-abnegation. So much of misunderstanding about what you call non-attachment. What does it mean? It means that don't expect anything. So is it possible not to expect anything? Without motivation, it is impossible to do anything. Spiritual life is the highest to motivation. God is the highest to profit. You know that story, you remember? A monk was sitting under a tree in a village, and a villager was passing by. And seeing the monk, he saluted, because that is how people are taught. Seeing the salutation of this villager, the monk got up, prostrated, sastanga pranam. And the villager was taken aback, said, "Sir, why did you do that to me?" And the monk asked, "Why did you do this to me?" Then the monk answered, "See, why did you bow down to me? Because you are a monk. And what is a monk? One who renounces the world is a monk. Look here, renunciation. Your renunciation is far superior to my renunciation. After all, if somebody renounces 1 pound in the hope of getting £1,000,000, is that a bigger sacrifice? If somebody renounces £1,000,000 for the sake of getting 1 pound, that is the real renunciation. I renounce this 1 pound worth of the world in the hope of getting £1,000,000 worth of God. Whereas you are such a great sacrificer. You sacrificed £1,000,000 worth of God for the sake of this 1 pound worth of this world. Your sacrifice is far superior to my sacrifice. That is why I prostrated myself in front of you." So people think non-attachment means, first of all, don't expect anything. No, you expect not petty things, but the very highest thing. Call it God, call it liberation, nirvana, whatever you call it. Secondly, non-attachment doesn't mean that we have to be cold and indifferent and all that. How do we know we are non-attached? One way of saying, "Oh, I am not affected." If you are not affected, maybe there is something seriously wrong with your nerves. You are a very dry fellow. There is, you know, some gland is not working in you. That is why you don't feel anything. You must feel the very best more than anybody else. If somebody is suffering, you feel the suffering. If somebody is happy, you get elated seeing the suffering, the happiness of other people. You must have the tremendous amount of feeling. But then what is the meaning of non-attachment? Complete self-abnegation. This ego, it becomes completely transformed. A person of pure selfishness becomes completely unselfish. That is the only test of non-attachment. This idea is so beautifully brought forward in this chapter, which we will discuss in our next class. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.